Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to The Vanished ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts.
Some of the stuff that we've heard has been horrific. All we want to do is find our father. Like, no child wants to hear. We want every story, we want every lead, but no child wants to hear the horrific things that we've heard. He was an amazing person. He deserves to be found. He deserves to have peace. We deserve peace. No child should ever have to go through this, or any person. I hope that people come forward.
He's my baby brother, and I will do everything and anything I can to give his family peace and to find him. He was a dad, four kids, and a grandpa. They called him Bob, to see what they go through on a daily basis. And I want to be able to help resolve this case for them and for my brother, and to get the justice my brother deserves.
And that's the last I seen or heard from.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the honesty.
Yeah, I mean, it's my uncle. I'd rather dead honest about finding this guy and want to know what the hell happened or where he's at.
And that's what I wanted to,
I mean,
too,
that's where I'm at. Like I said, I mean, I'm not, I have no reason.
And that's why, you know, I've been telling everybody, listen, I don't care what you're into. No. You know, I want to know where Steven's at.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And that's what I've been, you know. Hey, I want to find him, too. I'll be more than willing to give every honest answer, everything there is. And that's a God's honest truth. Okay. Of how everything went down when I seen him on Friday.
On January 4th, 2019, Steve Millis spent some time at his nephew's home before making a quick trip to a dollar store in Hesperia, Michigan. Steve was seen on video surveillance entering the store at 6:40 p.m. At 6:47, Steve walks up to the counter and purchases a few cans of cat food. He smiled at the clerk and nothing seemed out of the ordinary. A minute later, Steve exited the store and disappeared into the night. The Newaygo County Sheriff's Office began investigating what happened to Steve Millis. What they uncovered was a tangled web of stories about what happened to Steve and why. They conducted hundreds of hours of interviews and executed many search warrants. But what happened to Steve Millis remains a mystery. I'm Marissa, and from Wondery, this is episode 319 of The Vanished, part one of Steve Millis' story. Audible offers thousands of popular favorites, exclusive new series, guided wellness programs, comedy, and exciting new voices in audio. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. The Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, doing chores, you decide. I like to listen a little bit each evening while I'm cooking dinner. And it's great for my evening walks, too. Recently, I've been listening to Lay Them to Rest by Laura Norton. It's a fantastic audiobook. You don't want to miss it. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. That's audible.com/MIA or text MIA to 500-500. 49-year-old Steve Millis disappeared on a chilly winter evening in early January of 2019. However, no one immediately noticed that anything was amiss. Steve was the father of four children, but they were grown and had families of their own. The previous spring, Steve and his wife had separated, so there was no one within the family who immediately noticed his absence. We spoke to Steve's daughter, Amber, who told us how she and her siblings all began to notice that they hadn't heard from their father.
It was a Friday, and my brother stopped over, and we're just talking, and I'm like, you know what? One of us mentioned that we hadn't heard from him in a little bit. It had been close to a week, and that was abnormal. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I haven't either. Or Brad, one of the two of us realized that neither had the other one. So we called our sister Ashley, and she's like, yeah, let me look when the last time was, but I feel like it's been a few days. And she looked and was like, yeah, it's been like a week. So that night, all three of us realized it had been a week since any of us had heard from him. And that's very abnormal.
Amber's sister Ashley told us that she began making phone calls after she and her siblings realized that their father was missing. Ashley was trying to track down who had last seen or heard from Steve and when.
It was January 11th. Our dad usually every morning, he would send out in the morning, he would say, hey, Ash, or hi, Ash. You know, it wasn't even any like deep conversation. He would just say, you know, sitting out enjoying the view, having a cigarette and my morning cup of coffee. So my brother Brad had not heard from him in a little bit. And he asked my other sister Amber, have you heard from dad? And she said, no, we have children. So obviously it didn't red flag to us right away. And she texted me that night and she said, have you talked to dad lately? And I was like, no, you know, matter of fact, I haven't. And so then I had started reaching out to people. I'm originally from Hesperia, so I know a lot of people up there and a lot of people that my dad hang out with. So I started reaching out to his friends and everybody seemed to not know where he was, but know where his vehicle was and know which day he had gone missing. I was going over the messages from when he had gone missing. You know, these were kind of things that were a little alarming to us. I said, have you seen my dad, Steve Bellis, around lately? We're trying to just locate him. And this was at 2:41 a.m. And one of his friends said, I haven't. I know everyone is worried, but I know he's okay. We got to find him fast, though. He's got to be in a big jam. But I know he'll hold up for a little while, Ash. Things that people were saying were alarming, but nobody was alluding that he was missing or hurt or anything. Just that they hadn't talked to him.
Amber felt that what they were hearing about their father was odd. She wasn't quite sure what to make of it all.
Ashley knows a lot of those people more than Brad or I do because she grew up in that town. So she was able to get in contact with quite a few people that first night. And all of them said roughly the same thing that they had heard. He got arrested for driving on a suspended license. And that his vehicle was parked at the Dollar General parking lot. So I called, looked at all of the jail registries in the area, like all of the surrounding counties, and he was in none of them. And then I called them and all of them said, nope, he hasn't been here. And then I looked in the hospitals and I was even afraid, like, maybe he had like some kind of psychotic break and he was in the hospital and didn't remember who he was or something. I knew that was like really far-fetched, but I'm like, maybe, you know, maybe it's a possibility. So I even looked, obviously I looked up his information in the hospitals, but then I even looked to see if they had like a John Doe kind of patient and no one did. So then we started backtracking and looking into where did the rumor initially start that he had been arrested. And we found who it started with and that person didn't really have an answer. They just said like, well, it just made sense. Where other people were saying like, you know, so-and-so saw him getting pulled over and saw him arrested. And then come to find out, he's like, no, I didn't see it. It just kind of made sense when I saw his car sitting there. I figured he must have got pulled over and arrested.
It seems strange that Steve had disappeared. And as the family was just figuring out that no one had seen him, there were already rumors going around that they had to dispel. Something strange was going on, but Steve's family didn't quite have a firm grasp on exactly what.
We knew immediately that something obviously was very wrong. And that this was like so out of character. He was always so close with us and in constant contact that we knew it was just so abnormal. And not only in contact with us, but he was like such a social person that he was like posting on social media, stopping by friends' house and things like that. So when we realized that nobody had any contact friends, like the gas station that he would go to every day, he hadn't been there. We knew something was really wrong, but there were a few people who tried convincing us that he was either A, suicidal, or B, ran off to start a new life. But it took like minutes to squash all of those ideas. And it took law enforcement a bit longer to come to the realization, but they did finally kind of weasel out any other explanation for him being missing. But there was also the rumor that he was in trouble with the police, and so maybe he was like on the run. But the police were able to tell me almost immediately that he did not have any outstanding warrants, and so that was not the case.
Steve and his wife, Stephanie, were separated at the time, so they weren't in contact frequently. but it was around this same time that she got messages about Steve.
I got a couple of messages from a couple of his buddies that I knew of around probably January 9th or so, asking me had I seen or heard from Steve. And I replied back to both of them, no, I haven't. Why? What's up? And they said, well, nobody has heard from him in a while. First, it was just like, oh, he's going to turn up kind of thing. You know, I mean, it was very unusual for him not to be in touch with the kids. Very unusual. But that, my first thought only lasted just a few days because there's absolutely no way. And foul play came in pretty quickly.
We often find that there's a grain of truth in the rumors that we hear. One thing did end up being true within the rumors about Steve. While he wasn't arrested at the Dollar General, as some had claimed, that was where they did end up finding Steve's black 1998 GMC Jimmy.
When we first realized he was missing, that was a Friday. On Saturday, we drove to where his vehicle was, and his vehicle was indeed parked right where everybody had said it was. We went into the store, and we were able to view the video footage, the surveillance from that day. And it shows him walking in, and he buys a can of cat food, and he pays with change, and then he walks out. He was a very, like, clean and organized person, and he had, like, a little overnight travel bag that had, like, his hygiene items in it, and, like, that was left in his vehicle. And to me, if he was starting a new life, he for sure would have needed a toothbrush, deodorant, and a shaver. And those were just left in his vehicle, like, all in, like, a little bag. And so we never found the cat food either. Like, it shows him buying this cat food, but we don't know what happened with it.
Finding the car was a major clue. Ashley gave us some more information about what she noticed when going over her father's car.
We went to the vehicle. Well, first we had asked the Dollar General people if they had seen him. And they said no, but they could, like, look back on their security and see, because we showed them a picture and they knew him, and see when the last time he was in. They were doing that. We went out, me and Amber, and kind of poked around in his vehicle. Everything was as if he had just went in the store and planned on coming back out. He had his night bag. His socks were folded in it. His toothbrush was there. It was packed neatly. It was a night bag, as if he was going to hop back in and go on his way for the night. His window was still cracked from, like, he smoked, and I assumed he would have probably thrown a cigarette out and then gone in the store. That was still down. We looked for a phone. There was no phone. Everything that he owned was in that vehicle. And so to us, it was a red flag because he just wouldn't leave his things.
Amber told us about the initial police response after they reported their father missing.
So initially, they said that they didn't think they would need to take dogs up in the area. They weren't worried that there was any, like, foul play. So dogs weren't ran immediately. They wanted all of his social media and, like, phone numbers for any devices he had. So we gave those to him. Brad and I had, I think Brad had, like, two numbers for him, and I had just the one. And the one number they had, they linked to an iPod. And I don't know a lot of information behind that, but they did track the iPod to Pennsylvania. So they chased that lead for, like, a long time. So I think what it was is that, I'm kind of assuming here, but I'm assuming that he had just used somebody's iPod at one point and, like, called or texted Brad from it. And then the police, like, I mean, they spent a freaking long time on that whole Pennsylvania thing. I'm like, you guys, you're beating a dead horse. Like, he is not in Pennsylvania. He's just not. I mean, like, the device is active. It's walking down whatever road. I'm like, well, you can send someone to go check it out, but I'm telling you, you're looking wrong. So it took them, I believe, at least a week to remove his vehicle from that lot. So it ended up sitting in that lot for over 2 weeks, unlocked. Several people said they had, throughout the weeks, had been to the vehicle and, like, gone into it for things, which is so bizarre to me that people were, like, willing to just talk about it. But yeah, people were taking things out of it. Friends of his, like, one person said, I took some things that he would want me to hang on to.
We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't settle for that one doctor that isn't really addressing your needs. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable. And you can even search by location, availability, and insurance. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. Once you find the doc you want, you can book them immediately. You can filter specifically for ones who take your insurance, are located near you, and treat basically any condition you're searching for. The typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 and 72 hours. That's it. I use this and you should too. Go to ZocDoc.com/vanished and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/vanished. ZocDoc.com/vanished. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. I've been using Greenlight with my older two kids for years. One thing that I love about it is that I can set up recurring or one-time chores, customized to my family's needs, and then my kids earn an allowance to reward them for a job well done. Not only does it motivate them to actually get the chores done, but it also teaches them a bit about financial literacy and independence. They're learning to earn, save, and spend wisely. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/vanished. That's greenlight.com/vanished to try Greenlight for free. One more time, that's greenlight.com/vanished. What could have happened to Steve Millis? Just as with every case we cover, we have to take a look back at Steve's life in order to better understand what may have happened to him in January of 2019. Steve's older sister Cindy gave us some background information on their lives growing up, and also into adulthood, since Steve later went on to work for Cindy and her husband at their business for many years.
Steve is technically my half-brother. Same mama, different daddies. I wasn't raised with him in the house because I was so much older. There's 11 years difference between Steve and I. I mean, as a kid, I grew up with him, and I've got a lot of wonderful memories. He's just a cut up. And we used to pick on him all the time because he was our younger brother. It wasn't until 82 when I moved to Hesperia and Steve was in just entering like high school, junior high. And he used to come to my house every single day after school because he was getting into some trouble. So instead of roaming town, I made him come to my house and I made him do his homework and actually mentored him for most of his adult life. Right after high school, my husband and I had lived in Holland. So he moved to Holland and my husband was a printer. So he got Steve a job as a printer. So Steve did that most of his life. And then eventually my husband and I opened up a label shop and he worked for us at the label shop. So he spent most of his life as a printer. We make labels. So you have to be able to run these big 120-foot machine, six colors. So there's a lot of technical things you've got to know, and you've got to know color. But Steve had such a knack for getting the colors exact for our customers. He was very conscientious on his job, and he loved it. He loved printing. He loved working for us.
When we spoke to Steve's wife, Stephanie, she told us that they were separated when Steve went missing. But she was also able to give us some background information on his life and the relationship the two shared for many years. Stephanie moved in with her father in Hesperia in the 1980s so that she could work at her dad's restaurant there. Steve was a customer and the two hit it off. Ashley is Steve's daughter from a previous relationship, Stephanie and Steve went on to have three more children together. Stephanie told us more.
We had our first baby, Amber, in June of 1988. We were married October of 88. And then we had another daughter, August of 89, and a son in October of 93. During those years, Steve was gainfully employed, always had good jobs, was an excellent provider, was the best dad a kid could have ever asked for. I couldn't have asked for better for my children. Steve was kind, loving, wonderful, patient, funny, happy, just generous and lovely and loving and very amazing and very sharp. Oh my goodness. So funny. So funny. Could make you laugh. Put a side of humor to everything. He was loving. He loved hunting, loved fishing, loved teaching kids how to hunt and fish. Would take kids hunting and fishing who were less fortunate, that maybe they didn't have a dad in the house or weren't into hunting or fishing. He took in so many kids and taught them so much stuff. So supportive of our children in any sports they ever played as kids. He coached, lots of memories, camping, just his love. He was just a good, good man. And we really did have a beautiful relationship for 20 years, I'd say. A really wonderful marriage. I couldn't have asked for anything better.
Steve's daughter Amber shared some memories of her father from when she was growing up.
So he's so funny, very quick-witted and sarcastic, and just so funny. My childhood was perfect and pretty idyllic. We spent a lot of time hunting and fishing and playing in the woods, mushroom hunting, riding quads, dirt bikes, just country life. It was really perfect. And I spent a lot of time with him. I mean, my parents were married, but most weekends us kids would go up north with my dad, you know, hunt and fish and all that. So we were very close. We spent a lot of time together. There was some time where he worked second shift. I think I was like in elementary school. And I remember I would like leave him notes, wake me up when you get home so I can see you. Cause you know, I would miss him when he was working second shift, but then on the weekends, we were always together. And I think that only lasted a few years because then I remember middle school, high school, he was at all my games. I played sports and he was at everything. And he coached my brother's baseball team when we were little. Definitely very involved.
Ashley also has fond memories of her father from childhood.
Very friendly, like talkative. He could make any crowd laugh and enjoy the time that they were with him. I'm the oldest, so it's me, Amber, Amanda, and Brad. We used to joke around and laugh that we were the AAA. Finally, he got his boy, his baby boy. But he still did all of those things. And just because he had Brad, he still took us girls out hunting and fishing and showed us that side of the world. He never just did it with Brad. It was always as a group, always as a family. He was big into doing stuff as a family. I remember he took me to shoot my first buck and I had never even been into hunting, but he took me out to Des Mars and I shot my first 8-point with him when I was 15 for my youth hunt. He took the deer and got it mounted for me. So he was always great like that. He did it with his grandkids. He kept the fun outdoor, but he showed them to the right way.
When Amber was a teenager, she began to notice some changes in her father, but wasn't quite sure what was going on.
I just would hear rumblings from family that maybe something was off, but I didn't really notice it. And part of it was probably my age and maturity level. I didn't really just recognize that stuff because my childhood just seemed so normal. So I would hear about it a little bit, but it never really affected me. And it wasn't until well into adulthood, just a few years ago, that I noticed, started learning about the drug use and noticing trends and things like that. But it definitely wasn't until I was much older that I first noticed it. I noticed him not being as reliable as he had once been, way more tired. I think it started maybe with he was laid off of work
And then I noticed, you know, he wasn't like quick to go back to work, which was very abnormal to him or very abnormal for him. So then it was kind of like kind of going job to job, not really holding down jobs. And then him and my mom started having like marital issues. And that's when I'm like, oh, there's something more going on here than just got laid off of work. I think that's when I first realized that depression was an issue. And then there were times where he would pretty emotional, like pretty tearful, which was abnormal for him. Abnormal for what I had known growing up. And that kind of set it off to me like, oh, there's kind of something up here.
Steve began to seek treatment for mental illness, but that seemed to be a roller coaster for him. He didn't always like the way the medications made him feel, and it was difficult for him to find balance.
That was just like within the past few years that it got really out of control. Because I know for several years in my early adulthood, so I'm 32 now, I guess 5 years ago or 8 years ago or something, he was being treated for bipolar depression. And I know there was a lot of issues. Like he didn't like how the medications made him feel. He felt like a lot of them made him more depressed. And then some of them amped him up and pulled him out of the depression. And he liked that. But then he would start making like reckless choices, you know, overspending or calling into work too much, like things that were abnormal for him. And so my mom would kind of try to like work with his doctor to like, you know, balance out the medications. And he really hated that. He really felt like he didn't really have a say in it. And he felt like people were making choices for him, which they were, but they were, he needed that help. And he didn't like that he needed that help. And that's when he started, seems like they went back and forth with that kind of a situation for a couple of years. And then probably a few years before he went missing is when he really started self-medicating. And then I would say like 6 months before he went missing is when he started using, to my knowledge, is when he started using the crystal, or at least when it like really took his life over. And I mean, he may have been like dabbling with it, using it here and there prior, but it was never something that I perceived as like a real issue. Like it was never like really affecting his life until 6 months to a year before he went missing is when it really, things really turned. But through it all, he was still dependable to me, which was crazy that he could still pull it together enough that like if I needed him, he was still right there.
Amber was watching her father's life spiral out of control. The person who was once the rock of their family seemed to be losing their grip on reality. Amber began to fear for his health and safety.
He was doing odd things. And I think in retrospect, I think it was all actually crystal meth that was making this happen. But to me, it looked like mental illness. Well, for sure, it was crystal meth exacerbating his mental illness, I guess. But he was just doing weird things. My mom would tell me about like hiding things like in the woods, you know, like little stashes of money or like personal things to him. He would kind of stash them in the woods, just doing bizarre things. I had to take him to the med center. He had a wound on his arm that looked like it was getting infected. So I took him to the med center and they were going to send somebody in to do an x-ray. And he thought they were doing, it was really bizarre. Basically, he said he had to go to the bathroom. He walked out and left and didn't tell me and left me in the room. An hour later, I finally went out and asked the receptionist, my dad didn't come back. And they're like, yeah, he walked out. He left and found a ride. So he thought they were like pretending they were going to do an x-ray, but they were actually going to do something different. I don't know. I don't know if he thought it was a procedure they were going to do or they were going to keep him against his will. I don't really know what he thought. Another time I gave him a car ride up north and he was ducking down in the seats. He thought people were following us. He was just saying things that didn't really make sense. And then what finally broke is that he said he would, if the police ever came for him, he would get into a shootout with the police. So then I'm like, you know, somebody is going to end up being unsafe here, whether it's him or, you know, somebody's in danger. He had this perceived threat, but it wasn't real.
Stephanie believes that Steve struggled his entire life due to significant childhood trauma. This was not something that he shared with many people, but he did confide in her about it. This trauma followed him throughout his life.
He never told, not anybody that I am aware of besides myself. And it was not good. It was not good. It was not good at all. It broke my heart to hear them, things that happened to him. It affected him. I mean, the internal pain that my husband carried for so many years. And eventually that pain just spills out. It just does. And that directly sent him right into the lovely arm of drugs. all of that. You know, he lost brothers to suicide. One was a murderer, suicide. He had a lot of trauma in his life. Very, very sad stuff.
Steve's sister Cindy had noticed a change in him. She was also his employer and felt like she needed to show him some tough love.
Unfortunately, he started drinking and not reporting for work. So unfortunately, I had to fire him, which broke my heart. But I didn't like the path he was going on. So I knew I had to do something to help him. And if that was the only way I could help him, then that's what I did. You know, he was okay with it because he knew, I mean, he wouldn't show up for work. So, you know, I mean, as an adult, he knew what choices he was making. And he made the choice not to work because of the alcohol. Even though I was his sister, I was still his employer. I have to think about my business. And if he couldn't do the job every day like I needed him to, then I had to replace him. But we still loved each other. We got along together. It didn't affect our family, and it didn't really affect our relationship. You know, our mother was very strong for both of us. And, you know, she agreed, Steve, you don't show up for work, because she owned a business herself. If you don't show up for work, you're going to get replaced. There was no bitterness at all. I still went and visited him all the time. Just a few years before Steve disappeared, I went through a very hard divorce of 35 years. And Steve was my husband's best friend. And Steve was there for me every step of the way, emotionally. He was my rock. Even though he was my little brother, he was my rock.
Cindy explained that multiple people in their family passed away in a short time frame. And this seemed to have a deep impact on Steve, who was already struggling.
What affected Steve the most? Alcoholism runs in my family. And to this day, I don't drink. When my mom died, it really affected Steve. I mean, really hard. Then the following year, my brother, Mike, died. And that was Steve's mentor. And that just overdid Steve in. He had already lost two brothers and his mother. Then a year later, his dad, my stepdad, passed away. Steve was really bad into the drugs. His family turned their back on him because we were doing the tough love. He wanted to come and live with me, and I said, you can come stay with me, but your drugs are not allowed. You're going to have a curfew. You're going to live under my rules. Well, then he come back, you know, I'm 49 years old. Nobody tells me what to do. And it's like, but this was my home and my life, and I'm telling you, it's unacceptable, and I won't accept it. We all did the tough love, and that was the last I ever heard from him. So, you know, you wonder if tough love is really a good thing or not. But I made that decision, and I stand by it, because I was doing what I thought was right for him. I wanted to help him get clean. Well, instead, he ended up with the wrong crowd.
Less than a year before Steve disappeared, things seemed to be continuing to escalate, and Amber felt like she needed to intervene.
When I had him admitted, that was Easter weekend of 2018, is the weekend he was committed. They put him on a slew of medications there to stabilize him, and then gave him scripts to leave with, and I went to fill the scripts, and I think I dropped the scripts off, and he never picked any of them up. So I called them, and they said that there was two appointments that had to be set up. I think one was with a therapist and one was with like his primary care, and they were going to do injectable meds for him so that he would just go once a month and get a shot of the meds and then we wouldn't have to worry about compliance. But he refused to go to that doctor's appointment and refused to go to the therapy. He actually lied to me for a little while, for a few weeks, and said he was going and I would give him rides, but he would just like go in. I think he must have just sat in the lobby and then back out to the car. Because I found out after a couple weeks that one of the therapists called me and said, oh, he hasn't been making it to his appointments. I'm like, wow, I've been taking him twice a week.
Having her father involuntarily committed was a difficult decision for Amber. She shifted from having the typical parent-child relationship with her father to having to be the one essentially forcing her father to get help.
It was confusing, and it was also hard to tell, did he need help or did he need correction? Which is a really weird place for me to be in as his child, because it almost put me in like a caretaker role. Do I need to be finding him services and possible like rehabs? And, you know, how much of that does he need versus how much correction does, you know, does he need me to go cold shoulder, cold turkey, like you'll lose me if you don't straighten up? Or does he need me to be a caretaker and find him rehab and find him treatment? So it was very confusing and emotionally draining for me. And I was mad a lot. I was angry with him towards the end. It was frustrating. But we're so close. We were so close that I also felt that maternal, like I need to help him. Like he's a hurting person and he needs help. So I grappled with that a lot. Something my dad told us like our whole childhood was loyalty is everything. And so it was so heartbreaking feeling like I was not being loyal to him and like get law enforcement, quote unquote, against him or to like, you know, have them step in to keep him safe. Felt like I was doing the ultimate betrayal. But at the end of the day, I have to keep him safe, whether he's happy about it or not. And when he was in that facility, oh, he was awful at first to me while in the facility because he felt like I was completely to blame, which I was, but he didn't want to see it as I was protecting him. He saw it as I was betraying him. But I would still do it again. I mean, it saved him for a while. But it was tough having to make those decisions.
Steve's wife, Stephanie, was witnessing the life she had built with her husband quickly deteriorate. She felt helpless and didn't know what else to do. She had hoped that having him committed would be the rock bottom that Steve needed to hit in order to turn his life around. But unfortunately, it only angered him.
When crystal meth really became a problem for him, and for us, I guess you should say, because it affected us all very badly. But using Steve was a different kind of animal, more aggressive, definitely, more urgent, definitely, more in a hurry, way more anxiety. Oh my God, the anxiety was terrible. He would sometimes have like psychotic episodes, they called them, due to the use of so much crystal meth. And he would like always think somebody was chasing him, always think somebody was following him, always think somebody was out to get him, always thinking somebody was going to hurt him. So he was always on edge, always on edge, always waiting for whatever was to come next. It wasn't a very good situation at all. It was just a very, very sad thing to watch the man that I had loved, still to this day love, so very, very deeply, just have his brain just chewed up and spit out. And there's no talking any sense into them. There's no, it's a very bad, very bad, bad, bad deal. Very bad. Well, it had a terrible effect on our relationship. Because it's very hard to live with somebody who's, you know, going through that, like paranoid like that. It's just nothing you ever want to see. It's nothing you ever want to watch your loved one struggle with ever, ever, ever. He had left here, left our home. Our kids and all, you know, all of us were really, really very, very worried about him because he just wasn't making, you know, a lot of sense. He was paranoid all the time. My daughter Amber went to the judge and asked for an emergency evaluation or something like that to where he could be picked up and brought into a hospital and evaluated. So the judge granted that. And oh, he wasn't happy about that at all. Oh, he was so mad. Oh, he was furious. It was the hardest thing I know any of them have had to do. I mean, this whole thing has been unbelievably, unbelievably difficult for my children, my older grandchildren. I mean, he was the best grandpa the kid could have ever, ever asked for. So this has been, I mean, I wouldn't wish this nightmare on anybody. Nobody deserves this. I don't want to portray a bad light on him because he didn't deserve anything that happened to him, whether it was when he was a small child or all the way up to, he didn't deserve any of this. I wanted to save him.
Everyone wanted to save Steve. They wanted the old Steve back. His children were trying to help him get on a more stable path. But Steve didn't seem overly receptive. Steve and Stephanie's marriage had fallen apart. The man who had once provided and cared for them was nearly unrecognizable to his loved ones. Though glimpses of the Steve they knew and loved would still shine through on occasion. This is when Steve moved to Hesperia.
So him and my mom separated. It was Easter of 2018. Due to the mental health issues, he wasn't taking his medication, so he just was unstable, and she was done. So he moved in with my brother for the summer, and then it was about fall that he had moved to Hesperia and started doing his couch surfing.
After Steve moved to Hesperia, things were tense. His family knew he was using and not taking his medications, but they still kept in contact with Steve and hoped that he would turn things around and seek treatment on his own. Amber told us about a time that she ran into her father on a fishing trip.
So by summer, he was already completely gone, living up north and having a little less contact with us than normal. I mean, still like close to daily phone contact, but we weren't seeing him as often. And actually, one of the days was really odd. My kids and I were up north fishing, and we ran into him at a gas station. I was in the car, and the kids ran in the store. My older boys were like 10 and 12 or something. They went in to get a slushy and saw him there, and they hadn't seen him in a little while, which we were really close to him, so that was abnormal, and they were excited to see him. They ran out to the car, and they're like, they called him Boppy, and they're like, we just saw Boppy in the store. He's going to come out and talk to us. And I'm like, oh, yay, and I get out of the car, and I'm looking, and he was nowhere to be found. He had like slipped out of the store and left. I think he was feeling guilty or embarrassed. Maybe he had been using at the time, and he was embarrassed about running into them. He didn't want to make a fool of himself, so he just slipped out of the storm. It was really odd. Very abnormal for him, because he was like the guy who was calling me twice a week, you know, when him and my mom were together, like, hey, stop over, bring the kids. Where are you guys at? Miss you guys. What you up to? Bring the boys over. I mean, we at the minimum saw him weekly.
What we know about this time in Steve's life is that he was essentially couch surfing. He had several places that he would stay at. Some places more than others. One of these places was with a friend named Travis. Amber told us what she knows of this friend.
He was living with a friend of his in a neighboring town to our hometown. I don't know a ton about the friend. He's much younger than my dad. He's about my age. I met him only once. He and my dad were together. They came to help me. I was hunting and shot a deer, and I didn't have my knife with me. So I called him, and he came out, and he had the friend with him to help me process the deer. And that was in November. The friend seemed fine to me when I met him, seemed nice enough, but it's just things we learned since then that point to this guy not being great.
We will come back to this roommate, Travis, later in the series and discuss his possible involvement or knowledge of what happened to Steve. Steve would sometimes do work for people in exchange for a place to stay and a warm meal. Ashley told us that she knew of a woman that he was doing work for and sometimes staying at her home.
He would do small tasks around town, like helping people if they needed like yard work done or something was broken at their house. He was helping Deb fix up her house and stuff prior to going missing. She was allowing him to stay there. And he would just do small stuff around her house and her yard and stuff so that was his kind of his room and board. He wasn't working, so he was kind of up in Hesperia, like just couch surfing pretty much, just doing small things for other people.
The Vanished is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up after the winter, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. It's a good time to think about the right amount of socializing for you. Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you prefer more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. A therapist can help you learn how to set boundaries so you feel empowered to be the best version of yourself. Everyone can benefit from therapy. It's not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/vanished today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/vanished.
Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And I was thrilled to learn that Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I love that. I now have several items from Quince. I love their cardigans, pants, and shirts. I find their pieces to be easy to mix and match, and also to dress up or dress down. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/vanished for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/vanished to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/vanished. Steve was living a somewhat transient lifestyle for a period of months before he ultimately disappeared. We know that during this time, Steve was using methamphetamine and struggling to get by. We aren't going to pretend that Steve Millis was a perfect person. He had definitely hit a low point in his life. Our society has a fixation on victims of crime who are perceived as perfect or completely innocent. The truth of the matter is that if you dig deep enough, everyone has skeletons. Some are just more apparent than others. We make a point to cover people from all walks of life, even if their actions may be considered high risk. We believe every family deserves answers, and every missing person deserves to be found. On January 4th, 2019, Steve spent parts of the day with various people, who we will introduce to you later on in this series. By the evening of the 4th, Steve was at the home of his nephew, Sean Beatty. Steve had a cell phone, but would often run out of minutes and used Wi-Fi to communicate with people via Facebook Messenger. Sean's home was a place where Steve would often go to use the Wi-Fi. We requested records from the Newaygo County Sheriff's Office, and they granted our request and gave us access to hours and hours of interviews that they conducted. From the beginning, Sean's name kept coming up in interviews about Steve. They contacted Sean to see if they could set up a meeting.
He come here, and he said he's just using the Wi-Fi for, you know, just regular shit. He used his phone, bullshitted for a minute, said he's going up to the dollar store to meet somebody, and that's the last I seen of him.
Okay. Now, remember, listen, I don't want to put a case on you or anything. I just want information on Steve Millis, okay?
Yeah.
So just keep that in the back of your head, okay? I'm not the bad guy here. I'm just.
Oh, no.
But your name but you got to understand, your name keeps coming up on information about Steve.
Oh,
see what I'm saying? And I have to talk to you I'd like to talk to you face to face.
Is there any way you could come to my house and do this? Or
yeah, sure.
I can come to my house. It's fine.
I can come to your house. All right. I can be there in an hour or so. Are you going to be around?
Yeah, that'll be fine.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, partner. I'll see you in about an hour.
All right, bud.
Bye. All right, bye.
Holy shit.
Which one was
that? That was Beatty.
Investigators spoke with Sean at his home on January 15th. And he told them that he recalled Steve being there on January 4th with a woman named Deb.
And he was here, hung out for a little bit, used the Wi-Fi. He talked on the phone to somebody who was going to meet them at the dollar store, which I don't know who it was. He said that, you know, he didn't say anything. He didn't say who they were. And he ended up leaving. That was the last I had seen him. This was probably about 5-6 that he had left. He was here for a little bit, you know, just sitting here bullshit.
Okay.
He left, went to the dollar store.
Deb had been with Steve at Sean's house, but she left before Steve. In the time while Steve was still at Sean's, he recalled Steve talking to someone about meeting up.
And then he had that guy called, He was supposed to meet him up at the dollar store. Went to go meet him up at the dollar store. Whatever happened from there, I don't know.
How long after she left did he get that call?
Shoot, it was a while. He was always on his phone, though, you know? He's always on his phone. I don't know. He's always calling or texting or something, you know, somebody. So it was just normal.
We know that Steve did leave his nephew's home that night because he was captured on video surveillance at the Dollar General. Steve exited the store at 6:47 p.m. that night and was never seen again. His vehicle was later found in the parking lot of that store. According to Sean, he never saw Steve after he left to go to the store. But strangely, the woman who had been with Steve earlier that night showed up looking for him.
A couple hours later, this was, probably 10 o'clock? No, maybe between like 9 and maybe somewhere around there. It was later, 8, 9, 10, somewhere around there. That Deb lady had come back here. And she's alone. Where's your uncle? I'm like, I don't know where he's at, you know? But I don't even think she really even... Like, she had black shit on her face, like soot on her face.
Did you ask her about that?
Yeah.
And what'd she say?
I ain't gonna lie. She said she was in Muskegon smoking crack. I was like, okay, why would you have black shit on your face from smoking crack? She was kind of out of it a little bit. I don't know, like, just nothing out of the ordinary. You know, I didn't think of anything like that. You know, like, he would be, you know. At that point, none of this was going on, you know.
And she's
going with my regular day.
Did she ask where your uncle was when she came back?
No, I know she was pissed off at him. I know she was pretty pissed. Other than that the next day, you know, I call like, "Hey, where are you at?" And no answer, nothing. And just
So you private messaged him then? You private messaged him then?
Yeah, I messaged him. I think just trying to see what's up with him. You know, I hadn't heard from him.
Who was he supposed to meet at? The Dollar General.
No clue.
You don't know?
Right here, it was a guy. It was a younger guy. I could hear his voice. You know, his mind. You know, wasn't an older sounding voice.
What was Deb driving?
Deb drives a Cadillac Escalade.
Escalade?
Yeah.
This woman was angry with Steve because he owed her some money. She was out looking for Steve on the evening of his disappearance, visibly angry. But at this time, no one knew that Steve was missing yet.
What do you think happened to your uncle? Be honest.
Honest?
Yep.
I hope this lady didn't do nothing out of spite and just fucked it, you know, did something stupid.
So
I don't know.
Is that what you're thinking?
That's all I can think of.
What?
Why would he would not go this long without contacting any of us? With any of all of this shit that's going on, he would have called one of us. He would have called Amber, Ashley, Brad, somebody. And said, "Yo, I'm out partying." He'd do that. He wouldn't just go MIA. I see him all the time. That's my uncle.
Right,
you know?
Right. What would make you think it was her that did something? Well, what did she say to make you think that way? This whole thing.
She said, "I know people in Muskegon. I know people in Muskegon. I'm gonna kill him." She was pissed. She was pissed over the situation. You know, I don't know if it was speaking out of, you know, anger. I don't know. Just the.
Okay.
No, I don't know. When she came in that night, she came in. She went and sat down at the kitchen table just for a second and was just sitting there bullshit with my lady. I bet you she was here for 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes at most. And just was kind of, you know, my girlfriend was, she was doing her own thing, pillow parting around the house, cleaning or something. And she just seemed a little off, but I don't know. I didn't.
What do you mean off?
Like just, to me, she just seemed like antsy to go.
Was it because she was on drugs or because she was antsy?
That's what maybe. I don't know. You know, I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know her when she's on drugs. I don't right. know her.
Right.
Like, before all this, I could have passed her in the store and never knew who she was a day in my life. Like, I just met her. I don't even know where she's from.
Did she sound serious about all this? To you? Or did you just kind of...
I just brushed it off like, shit, she's pissed. She's, you know what I mean? I hear a lot of motherfuckers. You know,
but it was
like,
all over...
Like, oh, man, this dude did this. Man, I'm going to kill that motherfucker. I swear when I see him, you know? Like, people just say that type of thing, you know? I don't... It took it like a grain of salt. Didn't, you know, I didn't think anything of it. And then, you know, like, days go by, him not coming around. It's like, weird.
Sean's brother Joe, who also goes by the nickname Haga, also lived at this residence at the time and was there to back up Sean's story of what happened that night.
First of all, let's back up a little bit. How much do you know Steve Millis?
It's also my uncle. Like I said, me and Sean are brothers. Okay.
Yeah, so it's uncle?
It's Uncle Steve. Uncle Steve is Uncle Steve. Uncle Steve blows in by the wind blows. He's always here, there, everywhere. You know what I mean? That's Uncle Steve. Like, Uncle Steve, I don't know. He's a different character. Like I said, he's always doing something here or there. Stops in weird hours. Use the phone. Like I said, he's always on his Wi-Fi. I need some Wi-Fi. That's the last time I've seen Steve. That was Friday when I left. That's the last time I seen, hear, heard anything from him.
Do you know this, Deb?
No, I've never met her until he said, I've been seeing this lady, Deb, and I seen her. First time I ever met her was later that night when Sean said she was back here complaining about taking money from her. She said, he stole money from me, I'm pissed off, do you know where he's at, this and that. And she was sitting here, standing here in the living room going, hey, have you seen freaking Stevie? And I said, no, I ain't fucking seen Stevie anywhere. I don't know where the hell he's at.
And then what happened?
Then, like I said, she eventually left, and she left, and that's it. Still haven't seen no Stevie or heard from him.
Did she come back later on that night?
Nope, she didn't come back later that night. Actually, she came back this past Friday. Me and my buddy were sitting here, and she walks in, and she goes, I said, well, any luck? Have you seen or heard from Stevie? She goes, nope, still haven't seen or heard from him. And she goes, you know, as much as I hate the guy, I don't wish no bodily harm on him. I'm like, okay. And she asked me, she goes, he's got a son. I need to get a hold of his son. He's got a son. I said, isn't it? Son's name is Brad Millis. And she goes, oh, okay, Brad Millis. And then she goes, well, all right, well, I'm going to be headed to the Legion. If you hear of anything or anything like that, I'm going to head to the Legion. And that was as long as she was here, and she was right out the door.
The investigator pressed Joe for his thoughts on what may have happened to Steve.
What are you thinking about this whole thing?
I don't know. I'm thinking either he got mixed up into something real bad, and either he bailed state or he...
Why would you say he bailed state?
Because I just know Stevie, the way he is. He's always a mover, trying to make plays, you know. He's making money. I mean...
Who would he go out of state with?
I don't know anybody he'd go out of state with, but I'm just saying, if he was in any kind of trouble, I don't see him hanging around. You know what I mean? Like, hey, I'm not getting in trouble. You know, I don't see him hanging around. Or two, something happened to him that's not good. I mean, there's so many people and so many... He's a character, like... I mean, he just met, you know, constantly with this person, trying to make a deal on this or make a deal on that, or he'd sell you the shoes off his damn feet if it made him a buck or to the next thing. Like, I don't know. That's why I said I just don't know about Stevie, though. Like, I mean, like I said, I don't know if maybe took off out of state or just took off, period. Like, if something, you know, or if something bad happened to him. I mean, to me, it's just very odd that his car is sitting at the dollar store. That doesn't make any sense to me, period.
Why would you say something
because
bad?
Because I say something like that because I say I would think if he was doing something like he would leave it just somewhere he knew somebody. Okay, you know, like parking in the driveway or took off or something.
Why would you think something bad happened to him?
He messes around with a lot of people. Who knows what's going on, like I don't know with him because, like I said, he does.
But now that you hear this stuff about Deb, right? You heard about that, right?
Yeah.
The argument and stuff about the money and the...
The money, it makes me wonder, you know. Honestly, I told Sean, I said, maybe Deb has something to do with it. She was really pissed off that day. I don't know beyond that. I don't know her real character. I know in heat of the moment when you're pissed off, you say things that you don't mean. You know, I've seen it a lot of times. How many times... You know, seen somebody, oh, they pissed him off. Oh, I'm going to kill him or something. You know, realistically, never had, you know, that's just word of mouth, heat of moment.
What did she say to make you think that?
She just says, I'm pissed off. I mean, I'll kick his ass, you know, everything else. Like, but, you know, at the same time, she pissed off. Like I said, heat of the moment. I don't know if I'd say she did anything, but it's Could she have, or said something to somebody else? More than likely could have. I don't know. And that's the thing. I told him, I said, she was the only one I know that was pissed off at Steve when Steve went missing. So I talked to Sean and said, I don't know. I said, I'd like to think that this lady doesn't have anything to do with it or something like that, but at the same time, I don't know. I don't know this lady from the next person.
Right, right.
So I don't know. But, I mean, that's the last I've seen Steve, and that's where it's been.
Sean and Joe told investigators the same story about Steve being at their home, leaving to go to the Dollar General, and then Deb showing up later. One part of the mystery was that they heard what they thought was Steve making arrangements to meet someone. They just weren't sure who he was talking to that night. Investigators figured out who it was from Steve's Facebook records. It was a guy named Bill. They tracked him down at work later that evening, after they had left Sean's home. They noted that Bill appeared nervous. It was cold out. It was January in Michigan, after all. So they asked him to get into their vehicle where they could talk somewhere warm, but he refused. They explained to Bill that he wasn't a suspect. They just needed to know what he knew and what Steve may have told him. Bill agreed to meet with them the next day. Still, Bill appeared scared.
I want to be cooperative. I just, you know, I want to be on the same page as everybody, you know?
Listen, you're not under arrest. You're not going to jail.
I'm not.
Okay?
I don't want you guys to think I'm not cooperating.
Okay.
Bill got into the police cruiser and explained why he was hesitant to speak with them, and felt like maybe he should have an attorney.
Getting back to last night, why did you say you have to protect yourself?
No, I'm...
Just for curious.
Just because this is a pretty serious investigation going on. I almost feel silly, no matter what, for not having a lawyer, but I don't think I need that. I just want to help you guys. Like,
okay. So you're saying you don't need a lawyer, right?
I'm not saying that.
But you'll answer my question?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
You know, there's almost nothing that can come good of making a statement, you know what I mean? Like, that's the way I've always understood it. Anyway, I haven't been through this ever, especially with a detective.
Okay.
You know,
I don't think you have anything to worry about.
I don't think so either, but I know that, like, I could be completely innocent of something and say the wrong thing, being vulnerable, and then I'm not saying you guys are people in your profession do that, you know?
Okay.
I don't mean to, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
What do you think's going on here, Bill? William?
I just don't know if, like, because there's so much fucking, so many lies, like, that I hear people talking. I just don't know who to trust. What really set me off last night was Stevie Mills' ex-wife messaged me, and she was like, you need to go to the police right now, like, as soon as you're out of work, or else they're coming to your work. I'm just worried about, you know, like, mainly, I just can't, it's like, it's kind of overwhelming, the fact that how close I was to him, and if something did bad happen, you know, I could have possibly had an effect on that, you know. I could have.
How do you know Steve?
I mean, I know him from fishing in the river, like, for years. I mean, I used to see him every single, I have a best friend named John, we used to fish every weekend, and I'd see him on the river every single weekend when we were really young kids.
Okay.
He just talks, everybody, people that don't even know me, through this guy. I love him to death.
I'm going to be truthful with you, all right? Okay.
I'm upset.
Why are you upset? What's your thinking on this?
I'm worried dude, this ain't like him.
What's that?
It's not like him to leave his phone and shit like that.
This is when they get into Bill's last conversations with Steve, and how they decided to meet that night in the Dollar General parking lot so that Steve could sell Bill some fishing reels.
So have you tried contacting him?
It's just the day that I was going to meet him.
And when was that? The 4th?
I believe it was the 4th. It was the night that Yes, it was.
Okay. What was the conversation?
I was sitting right here loading up this truck of shit, and he had been, previously, we had spoke about, he had two older reels, Shakespeare 1810s. He knows, like, that's a common thing him and I share, is I collect vintage fishing equipment, so does he. He had offered one day, I don't know, he was broke or something, he wanted to sell me. I might have to sell my reel, man. Well, what do you need for it? Make me an offer. You know, so we went back and forth for a couple of days, and then once we had set a price on it, just like $40, he wanted to, always wanted me to meet. Well, I'm not living over in Hesperia anymore.
You used to live in Hesperia?
Yeah.
Get back to the reels then. So
so we went back and forth for a while. I could never catch him. Finally, we're sitting here, and he actually called me. He just doesn't call me too often.
What number did he call you from?
I was on Facebook.
Facebook?
So he had called. hey, I'm in town, brother, I got them nails.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of laggy. You know, I'm like, oh, I mean, I'm here till dark. I'm trying to, but I do have to hit my storage unit, man. Like, how long are you going to be? Oh, I'll be around. So let me know, you know. He's like, I got another one. Are you sure they're, you know, we got, kind of got, I'm like, are you sure they're 1810s, you know, because it's kind of a, there's reels that look like a Wonder Cast or something. But I'm like, you know, hey, are you sure? Like, yeah, yeah. I'm like, send me a picture, man. And he just took me a while to get him to send me a picture. I didn't hear from him. That was like maybe roughly, I'm not exactly sure, but that was a couple hours before dark. I don't know what time that would put it at, but. And I wanted to work out here on my truck till dark. I had my phone charging in my truck, so I didn't have it on me. I'd check it every once in a while, and he had been trying to get a hold of me. I called him back once. He didn't answer.
Did he leave messages or anything?
No, because I don't use that messenger thing too much. I know you can leave a voice message on there. Uh-huh. You know what? I think he did. Yes, he did. He left me a message saying, I'm out at Deb's. And I think I kind of ignored that one at that point because I was like, you know what? I'm going to get this done. This guy's dicking around. He's already out somewhere. I'm not going to chase him all over hell. I think I ignored that message. A little while later, he calls me back. And there might have been a call. I think there was a couple messages in between the calls. But
okay.
That I had missed. You know, hey, you know, are you on your way or something like that? I call him. He's like, hey, man, I'm waiting on you to make my next move. I'm like, dude, if you're in a hurry, just go. You know, I got my shit out here. It's going to take me a minute. He's like, well, no, I need your money to make my next move, you know? I'm like, okay, well, I guess, man. You got the other one, you know? Do you got it? Do you have the other 1810? And he's like, yeah. He just sent me a picture. I could tell it was real reels, and he had them. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll drop what I'm doing right now, man, if you're going to be there. Yep. And I didn't stop what I was doing right then. I kept dicking around out here for a minute. I was like maybe 10, 15 minutes after I told him I left. I messaged him right in that door of that garage right there, and I said, hey, don't leave yet. I'm on my way. He had said, I'm headed to Muskegon soon. I need your money to make my next move. I'm headed out for Muskegon here soon. At first, I thought maybe he was bullshitting me because he didn't seem like the last few times I spoke. It didn't seem like he was hanging around in Muskegon too much lately. I'm like, man, if you're in a hurry, just go. The last message I sent him, it wasn't my last message, but hey, I'm on my way, don't leave. He says, I won't. I'm in waiting in the caddy. Waiting in caddy. And that was the last message I got from him. So on my way there.
Did he say where?
Earlier, we had made an arrangement to meet at Dollar Store.
This is a potentially important clue. Steve says to Bill in a message that he would be waiting in the caddy or Cadillac. If you remember, Steve didn't drive a Cadillac. He drove a GMC Jimmy. Why would he be in a Cadillac? Was someone else with Steve at the dollar store? We know there was no one with him inside of the store.
And actually, earlier when I was asking him, the first time he contacted me, I was asking him whose house he was at in the trailer park. He had told me he was at the trailer park before the time he had left me the voicemail about being at Deb's. Because he said he was in town, and I know he doesn't have a house. So I'm like, well, where are you at, Steve? And he didn't really want to say.
So your last message with him, he sent you another pic while you're here. You waited 10 to 15 minutes. You're kind of blowing him off, you said.
Yes.
He said he's heading towards Muskegon to make his next move, right?
He said he couldn't make his next move until he met up with me.
Okay.
To sell the rails.
And you said just go, but he needed your money, correct?
Yeah, he says, no, okay. I need you to make my next move.
Okay.
That was over a call.
Okay. And then he comes back and says, waiting in the caddy.
When I said, hey, because I had told him like 10 minutes ago I left.
Uh-huh.
And it sounded like he was waiting, you know. So I'm like, hey, don't leave. I'm leaving now, you know, because I don't want to get over there and have you.
Right.
And I didn't hear back from him.
What time was that? Do you remember?
It was right at dark. I want 7-something, maybe, you know, 6:45. I don't know what time it gets dark. It was just before dark, I think I was leaving.
So did you end up going to the Dollar General?
Yes.
What time did you get to the Dollar General?
I mean, I rushed there because he stopped answering me, but it was, you know, I left here about dark or so. I made it there. I feel like I was looking at my clock. At 8 o'clock or so, or maybe, it was either 6:45 or 7:45. I sat there for an hour.
You got there at 6:45 or 7:45?
Yeah, right after dark.
So you think between 6:45 and 7:45 you were there? Is that what you're saying?
I want to say that I got there about 7:45 and stayed there till about 8:45.
Okay. And there was no Cadillac?
I wasn't looking about that. Like, he's such a freaking sucker. Like, nobody else that I've talked to had this, but I... Didn't even think twice. I thought he was referring to his beat up old shitty truck. Caddy. Wait in the caddy.
Is that what he called it?
I never heard him call it that, no. Okay. Right. But that, for some reason, that was brain fart or something. I didn't even acknowledge the caddy comment. So I wasn't looking for ones, but no, I did not see a caddy. There's a lot of people coming and going. You know, people I recognize from town.
So do you think he would have got a hold of you, even if, let's say he took off, he had to go somewhere, do you think he would have got a hold of you about the reels again that night or not?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought that, see, because I blew him off so many times, I thought that he got me back. Took off. Didn't want to wait for me, blew me off. Gotcha. But, yeah, I think he would have. Yeah, I definitely would have heard from him again, you know, like, he knew I was headed there. That was the first time I, right then and there, committed to coming and getting the reels, you know, like, it was, I think he would have. I feel like if he was on the run and took off, I might hear from him.
So you think he would have stayed for the real deal, I guess.
I mean, stayed over what?
Stayed at the Dollar General to do the deal with you for the reels.
Last thing he said to me is, I won't, I'm on my way. Like, he told me specifically. And while he was telling me this, I heard somebody bickering in the background. It was a male, but I couldn't make it out. My gut tells me it was Sean. But I don't...
Sean.
BD.
Just as they had asked the others, investigators pressed Bill for his thoughts on what happened to Steve.
What do you think? You said you got a good gut feeling, and it's usually true. What's your gut feeling?
I don't think that some freaking broad could take him. You know, like this Deb shit.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I've heard rumors that she was mad. No, I think that Stevie owed a lot of money out to a lot of people down in Muskegon or whatever. I think that's why he migrated north over the summer. This is all in my head.
No, this is your opinion. That's why I'm asking.
And I just feel like he might have owed money or he's always multitasking. You know, I think that he had to have had been meeting somebody else besides me there.
Why do you say that?
Because it sounds just like something he would do on top of the fact that there was a split second change of plans or somebody was pushing him to go and get his scrounge up as much money as he could or something. It's kind of hard to believe.
That brings us to the end of part one of Steve Millis' story. At this point, we know where Steve was on the evening he disappeared. He spent time at his nephew's house using the Wi-Fi. Part of the time that he was there was a woman named Deb with him. She was angry with Steve because he owed her money. Hours after Steve had left for the dollar store, Deb showed back up at Sean's house looking for Steve, and she was even more mad. No one ever reports seeing Steve after he was spotted inside the dollar store. Steve had been calling and messaging with Bill that night to set up a deal to sell him some fishing reels. In Steve's last message to Bill, he mentioned that he would be in a Cadillac, which was not what Steve drove. However, when Bill arrived, Steve was nowhere to be seen. Investigators viewed all of the video footage from inside and outside of the dollar store that night, and the ones from outside only showed headlights due to the darkness. They couldn't make out any other vehicles that were there that evening. But Steve's vehicle was left behind at the dollar store with his belongings inside. Had Steve arranged to meet someone else besides Bill that night? Perhaps someone who drove a Cadillac? Did someone else that Steve knew just happen by the dollar store at that time and things went south? You'll find that as we dig deeper into what may have happened to Steve Millis, that there are many different stories about what happened to Steve. These aren't just slight variations of the same story. They are wildly different tales implicating a large number of different characters. But there can only be one true story about what happened to Steve Millis that night nearly 3 years ago. If you have any information about the disappearance of Steve Millis, please contact the Newaygo County Sheriff's Office at 231-689-7303.
You know, and everybody's got me made out to be this big, bad fucking, you know, it's not me, man. It's not. Like I said, I'll take that lie detector test right now.
Yeah, you know, you said that you're not a rat, you're not a snitch. If you knew who did or what someone did to Millis, would you tell me?
If it came down to me getting set up or railroaded for this, I would tell you exactly what the fuck I've known and everything. I would give, if I knew somebody did something and it was getting pinned on me, fuck yeah, I would give them to you. Because I'm not going to die. Whatever happened here, if anything did happen, it's all getting put on me, and I didn't have shit to do with any of it. Whatever, I see what's coming.
Not to say to help you out and maybe other stuff, you know what I mean?
I don't care about that other shit. I care about this.
Yeah. Well, I don't blame you there, because your name's all over it. You saw it, wanted posters and shit like that.
I'm gonna go to the fucking store, man.
Yeah, no kidding.
Sounds like you're gonna arrest me. I'm being honest with you.
No, I believe you. It's just something we have to do. And we're just talking. I told you that before. We're just talking, but you're willing to talk to us.
Are you gonna arrest me?
No. Nope. I'm telling you right now, okay? You're honest with us?
I'm being honest with you.
Listen, we're here about Stevie. That's it. We're here about Stevie. Okay?
Just don't lie to me, please. Yeah, but you guys are tricky, too. Okay. And you have to do that.
I'm not being tricky.
That brings us to the end of episode 319. I'd like to thank everyone who spoke with us for this story. If you have a missing loved one that you'd like to have featured on the show, there's a case submission form at thevanishedpodcast.com. If you'd like to join in on the discussion, there's a page and discussion group on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at thevanishedpod and also on Instagram. If you enjoy this show, subscribe now and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Do you want to help support the show? There are a couple things that you can do. One way to help The Vanished is by supporting our sponsors. You can find links and promo codes in the episode notes. Another way to support the show is by contributing on Patreon, where you can get early and ad-free episodes. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for part 2 of Steve Millis' story. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loreau, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.